Joseph.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial.
Welcome aboard to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz. You're on episode number 114, and we have an action-packed discussion today. We're going to start off with day trading. You have asked me so many times for bring back this guest. His name is Fausto Puglisi. He is one of the original day traders. He is one of the original guys that was out there scalping and actually going against the market makers. He's pretty well known in the industry, and he actually teaches you how to do it. And he's a good friend of mine. I've had him on before, and I always get emails to him. So we're going to bring him on in a minute, talk about some day trading issues and maybe some things you haven't heard about level two, market making, things like that. I want to talk to him about, which I think, again, is interesting to you. The other thing I want to mention to you is we're going to talk about cash for clunkers. If you hadn't heard about this yet, wow, $4 billion more dollars. That's right. Another $4 billion is going to be spent to try to revive the auto industry while at the same time giving you, if you have a clunker, and we'll talk about what that is in a little while, but giving you up to about $5,000, give or take, to spend on a new car. Woohoo! We're getting a new car, baby! But it's all about pushing as much money in as we can to revive what is clearly an ailing economy. So all these green shoots and all that we're seeing, which are withering a bit in the last week of economic indicators and earnings, we have to kind of realize that as the government continues initiatives on a worldwide basis, and even at the same time when they're discussing how great things are out of one side of their mouth, the other side is they're kind of digging into their pockets and continuing to flush their countries and their economies with a massive amount of stimulus. What that tells me is that they are not so confident that they have actually come out of this yet. Even though the EU last week had talked about how they are slowing down and virtually going to turn off the spigot because they see that they see, as they say, sustainable growth in the European area, I am skeptical. Let me tell you why. Not because I want to be curmudgeonly, but basically we are seeing record unemployment there, housing problems in Spain in particular, in London, seeing their GDP equal to their deficit. That is not a recipe for sustained growth. It may be a recipe for stopping the free fall of the economy, but it is not a recipe for growth. So that in mind, I just want to mention that, you know, I think that they're going to have to revisit that. And I think there's a lot of more posturing going on than actual understanding of really the long-term level of sustained growth here. We have a worldwide collapse, and even China is showing that their imports and exports are just on the pathetic scale. And even though Japan seemingly has, you know, their markets have been doing very well, their PE and their ratios and earnings are absolutely abysmal. Spooky kind of stuff. But anyway, we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about particularly cash for clunkers, give you some good ideas to make some money. We're investing in that here at Horowitz & Company for our clients. Selectively, we have found and did a lot of research on what would really benefit from this whole initiative by the government that was passed last week. But before we do that, we're going to talk to Fausto Puglisi, and I want to mention to you that we have lots more coming up. It is the summertime, but that is no time to rest on your laurels. There are lots going on in these markets and a lot of opportunities that I see developing both on the long and short side. So stay tuned to this. And of course, something that you haven't heard yet, if you're new to investing and you want to hear a little bit more about, you know, PE ratios, PEG ratios, and the basics, you want to understand the basics, there's a new podcast that we put out called The Winning Investor. It's available on iTunes. It's through the Quick and Dirty Tips. Remember way back when I was, I dare say, the when I was the money girl. Remember that? I was helping out my friend, the grandma girl, Minion Fogarty, and I was helping her with about 10 weeks or so. She had to replace the guest, and I was yours truly, the money girl. Well, you know what happened with that? They liked it so much, and the audience liked it so much that we decided that it took some time, but we put together a little podcast called the Quick and Dirty Tips for the Winning Investor to Beat the Market, and that's available on iTunes. I would suggest you go right now. Let's see if we can bring that all the way up to number one in its list in the top 10 in iTunes. If you go and subscribe to that right now, again, it's the Winning Investor. Just look that up. Look up Quick and Dirty Tips Network. We'll also put a link on the Disciplined Investor. So let's get going with that. And when we get back, we're going to talk about cash for clunkers, some great investment opportunities. Stick around. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And this podcast is also sponsored by Audible.com. You know, one of the things I like about Audible is that you can, I mean, how many things do we juggle on a daily basis, right? You know, you're trying to do work, you're trying to read, you're trying to take care of the kids. What's really neat is that Audible.com, you can kind of do all that and at the same time listen to your favorite book, listen to a magazine, listen to a newspaper. I mean, it's just like listening to a podcast. So if you're into podcasts, I got to tell you something, Audible.com is awesome. I listen to books all the time and download books all the time. I just downloaded the, what was it called, The Last Speech? And listen to Steve Jobs' book, and I listened to Rigged, which is a book, I think I mentioned that before, I was listening to that about a year ago, Rigged by Ben Mezrich, and it's all about the oil industry and a really fascinating account of the trading pits for oil. But in my book, The Disciplined Investor, you can get there too. As a matter of fact, you can get it for free. And all you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/investor. What you get is a free, just basically a free membership for a short time to get your free book. And then if you don't like it, you can cancel it anytime. So don't worry about that. But just all you do is head on over there, check out all the books they have. I mean, thousands and tens of thousands of books, magazines, articles. You can get your Wall Street Journal delivered early in the morning, wake up and listen to it. Not in the shower, of course, but on the way to work if you do have a commute. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/investor for your free trial. I recommend it highly. Check it out. And welcome back to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. It's Andrew Horowitz here. And you know, one of the guests that I always get requests to bring back because he talks turkey about trading. His name is Fausto Puglisi, and he is the president and founder of Cyber Trading University. And he's a good friend of mine, and I haven't talked to you in a while on the podcast, Fausto, right? I mean, it's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while. I mean, obviously, we've just been busy, I guess. The trading's been all over the place.
I mean, the markets have been quite the, I guess I could describe it as, you know, love, hate, horror show, gorgeous, you know, being, you know, but tell me something. So you trade, just so everybody knows, you trade, you teach people how to trade. I'm not talking about trading. I'm talking about trading. We're talking about down and dirty, level two scalp trading on a day trading basis, okay? So anybody that's listening, I haven't heard Fausto before, we're going to get into a little bit of a discussion about what it all means now and how you can actually, I think how you can actually get involved in this. But I think more importantly, what I really want to go through is, you know, take me through a little bit over the last couple of years and maybe switch back to, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. What's going on in terms of the difference of trading then and now? What do you see?
Well, Andrew, obviously, you know, you and I go back, I think, was about 10 years now?
Yeah,
maybe?
Probably. Yeah,
about 10 years. Yeah. And, I mean, and one thing that kind of we both hit it off is that we're both traders, but I'm more of a hardcore market maker who trades as a market maker, and a lot has changed. And you know, it's amazing, but I've done a lot of speakings. I just came back from California, doing an expo up there, speaking up there. I was in New York and Canada, and I tell you, Andrew, I have not seen this volatility. No, I don't think anyone has said they've seen it since 1933. And obviously, you and I were not born. We don't know what happened then. But the volatility, I mean, think about it, from the Dow Jones going from 14,000 all the way down to 6,600 was unprecedented.
Right.
And there was some really great opportunities up until, you know, I would say right into the new year of 2009, where you know, we had this huge, what I call Katrina, that just destroyed this market. And now we're trying to, you know, you get the government trying to build this thing up. And just, you know, you had these financials that have been flying. But that story is over. You have the pharmaceuticals been hot. Oil took a huge beating, thank God, from 147. And we've been talking for a while, all the way down to 35, was it? I think.
Yep, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. But you know what? Actually, you mentioned a couple things there. That's interesting because the government's intervention in the markets. You know how I see it? Tell me what you think about this. It's kind of going on a seesaw. And on the other side of the seesaw is a 900-pound gorilla. And you know what? It looks like it could be fun, but man, you can get beat up pretty bad with that guy on the other side. And not because they're trying to do anything bad, right? Not that they're trying to hurt anybody, but the sheer weight and the sheer massiveness of that gorilla trying to get on that seesaw is going to hurt the person on the other side.
Well, and catastrophes make opportunities, and yeah. You know, and as much as that gorilla is going to sing, you know, Fausto's still going to be trading and making money. You know, it's funny because every time I talk to people, Andrew, they keep asking me, "Oh, what do you do for a living? What do you do for a living?" Because everyone wants to know what you do. I'm like, "Oh, I'm a trader." I'm like, "Oh my God, you must be getting killed." And I'm like, "This is probably the best month I ever had in my life." Right. They're like, "How is that possible?" I said, "Well, when you own Citi and it goes from $1 to $3, or Bank of America going from 6 to 15, and Bank of, you know, and you forget about the brand names like Apple and all of them. There's so many of them out there. FITB, you know, Fifth Avenue Bank."
But here's the deal. There's a difference between trading. Let's kind of clarify something, because as an investor, it's really hard to get your hands around those things. Maybe put not all of them that you mentioned, but you know, the banks are a disaster. The banks fundamentally are just absolutely disgusting. They still are. I don't care about the stress tests, and we can go on for hours about this. And the truth of the matter is, as an investor, now I'm separating this, as an investor, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to get near any of that because it is not something that you could really sink your teeth into and understand. Now, as a trader, on the other hand, you're looking at price only. That's all you're looking at. And I think the mentality is something like this. Tell me if I'm wrong, Fausto. You know, Citi at 2. So where can it go? Can it go to 1? Big deal. I'll pick up a little more. We'll see how it plays. Citi goes to 3. All right, you know what? I'll play it. I'll see if it goes to 5, whatever the number is. You don't even look at the fundamentals, right?
I don't even care. I don't even know what the company does. I mean, we were sitting here. It's so funny because, I mean, I remember we did a podcast about 2 years ago, and I would never do this, but I said that all the financials were going to be a crush. I don't want to sound like, you know, to my own horn, but I had my own radio show.
Yep.
I was talking about it. You know, once I heard, you know, I was getting phone calls from my students telling me that, you know, they're getting their lines of credit pulled. That's when I knew something was wrong.
Right. Yeah.
You know, when they were shutting that down, obviously they were running out of money. But as a trader, you know, it's terrible to say this, but we look at catastrophes as opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to say this, but 9/11, I lost a lot of friends in 9/11. I told you this before. But, you know, the day when the stock market opened up, I made a lot of money that day.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were even grieving. But you know what? The government still wants to get paid their taxes. You know, the mortgage company doesn't want to hear it. You know, you have to go to work. And as a trader, you know, we're a different type of breed. And,
mm-hmm.
and in this opportunity, this type of market conditions, it's a trader's market. That's what really it is.
Yeah,
and you know, it's sad.
It is. It is a trader's market. And I want to underscore that. This is something really interesting because investors versus traders. I want to really kind of get into this for a second. But investors versus traders. You could be a little bit of both, obviously. But investors, this is not an investor's market. This is a market, as I see it, that investors can be taken out at any time. At any time. You need to be, as I see it, quick on the draw. That means you'll miss opportunities, of course, sometimes. But at the same time, you're not going to get sideswiped, you know? But tell me, as a trader, how do you kind of, you know, let's kind of set it up here. You are at your desk in the morning, and you're looking each day for opportunities. Because I know for a fact, by the way, that your rule that you don't break when it comes to trading, that is you never hold overnight, right?
That's absolutely right.
Okay, that's for trading. So you don't hold that. That means every single day you have to come in with a new idea. It could be the same thing from the day before, of course, but you have to start again on that. So you sit down at your desk, you turn your computer on, you have your little cup of coffee, you are obviously eating that New York bagel, and what do you do next?
Well, then next thing I do is I go through what's called a top 20 list.
You don't call your mother?
No. Once I get into the zone, I don't talk to my kids. I don't talk to my wife.
Right.
I don't talk to, my door is closed. I mean, you got TVs off. You know, Weather
right.
Channel's done. I mean,
right.
I mean, you know, it's a good point you bring this up because a lot of people get they have to get interrupted and they don't realize that this is like a start of a race. I mean, when that door opens at 9:30, the market goes off. You got to be prepared. You got to know what you want to trade. You got to know what dominated market maker that is trading that stock. If he's on the bid and ask, which a lot of people are. It's another thing I saw a lot of people neglect. They don't even use level two quotes, which is like trading blind.
Explain that. Back up. I know I'm interrupting you, but explain what a level two quote is for the people who don't know what that is.
Well, let me tell you about going through the procedure. I'm going to get to that level two. I go through my top 20 list. I find stocks that have a lot of action in it for the day. And then what I'll do is I'll look at my level two, and I'll go through it, and I'll say, okay, I'll find out who the dominating market maker is. I'll go through the NASDAQ website. We're going to tell people a little bit later how to attend one of my free seminars, but I'll show you how to go through the NASDAQ website, and even New York's, you can find who is a dominating broker firm who runs that stock. And what I'll do is I'll look them at the level two. I'll see who's the highest bid, highest offer. I'll see if that's the guy who's been trading most shares the past month or the past year. And then last but not least, another thing, Andrew, a lot of people are neglecting, and I've been doing classes left and right about this, a lot of people are not using something called an ECN book. And which the ECN book is called Electronic Communication Network. That's where it's a hidden market where you get to see all the big orders. And, once again, getting back to that Citibank trade, I say it or not, I'm not saying I'm a genius, but I hit Citibank right at a dollar for one reason and one reason only.
Mm-hmm.
There was a 5 million share buyer on the bid on the ECN book, and he was not getting done. Mm. And he was sitting there, and obviously I watched that stock go from 30, and then like within a month I saw it go from 12 down to a dollar. He was not getting done. There was only one other place. Boom, he was hitting the offer, and that's when I thought, I says, you know what? What the hell's a dollar? Worst case scenario, take a shot with it. And sure enough, I mean, that was the start of the beginning of the financials. You know,
right.
And it's all about supply and demand, and that's what people have to do. But getting back to an investor and trader, if you can learn how to be a good trader, you'll be a phenomenal, phenomenal investor.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So when you look at the level two and you see the information, first of all, level two, let's talk about what that is. So basically it's a screen as part of your entire charting and execution platform that shows you the bid and the ask, but more than just the bid and the ask. In other words, let's stay on Citi. Citi's trading at, let's say, $2.03. You know, that's the bid and the ask. But that's the best, as we call, level one bid and ask, right? That's the best offer and the best bid.
Right. That's what you get in a newspaper. That's what you get on the internet. It's just showing you the level one is the first level.
Right, that's the best. That's the best. The cheapest, the cheapest buying and cheapest selling, if you will, or the best pricing. So now, a level two gives you, as I would call, I guess, depth, market depth. It tells you, okay, who's behind that. So again, using $2 to $2.10, maybe there's somebody at $1.99, $98, $97, $96. All these people are willing to buy it at a lower price on the bid.
Exactly. They have their limit orders out there. You could see all the limit orders from all the brokerage firms out there, and you could see the quantity of the amount of shares that they want to buy and sell, which
let's not get anybody too excited. While you may see the quantity, even I do this and you do it too, you don't want to tip your hand on really how much you're buying, so you can mask that quantity.
Well, that's something also I teach. It's called market maker traps. I mean, and there's head fakes that go on, and there are ways of them hiding orders behind, like I just told you about, maybe using an ECN and putting that big order out there. Andrew, trading is a game.
Yeah.
And, it's just got to know how to play the game, and people take it too personal. They look at it as too much of investing. I mean, you want to hear something scary, Andrew? The last class I did, I had 3 hedge fund managers take my class that were managing between $5 and $300 million taking my class because they still can't even figure it out themselves. And they were kind of embarrassed to take the class. I didn't say who they were, and I would never do that. But I'm just saying, they don't even realize what's going on in this type of volatile market. So don't feel bad at listeners out there, because I know a lot of people losing in their 401ks and so on, but not even the professionals know what's going on. Only people know what's going on is people on the street and the traders, and that's why they're coming to us.
Yeah, no, it's listen, anybody listening out there, I'm going to kind of let you off the hook. It is a very confusing market. And anybody that tells you, "Oh, we know which direction it goes," or if you read the how about this? The headline in the paper: today's market went down because unemployment was a concern and the dollar was being hit. I mean, come on! They're looking for anything to be a headline out there. They're looking for that headline kind of summary. The fact is, the markets do what they do because they do what they do, and you have players, and it's not only a game; it's a battle.
Well, I hope everybody learned that lesson, whoever's listening out there, regarding with oil. It's funny, but everybody was blaming Bush. Everybody was blaming the Arabs. And then it finally came out and said it. It was all speculation.
Yeah, that was
all speculators. Oh, all
don't
hype.
Even get me started. Don't get me started about this. Last summer, every time I heard somebody on TV talk about supply-demand, I said, where are they getting this information from, number one? Or are they really lying to my face?
Production by a billion barrels a day.
That was unbelievable. That really was unbelievable. You know, you wonder if all it was all about was them trying their best to push it up. And if it was that, why don't they do that on a regular basis on TV anyway? I mean, how many people talk their book? How many people go on TV and talk about a stock? And I tell you, just yesterday, a day before maybe, we saw an analyst or an advisor or somebody on TV, on CNBC, talking about a particular stock and all the benefits, and at the same time that stock started moving up. And you know what? The truth is that whether his firm started moving it up on the talk so they can get some action there, or if people were watching it and moved it up, the fact is that, you know, it did move up. But I'll tell you, as soon as he stopped talking about it, what happened? Right back down. Right? And I think that people have to understand that a lot of people are very self-serving. A lot of people are doing things and talking about talking their book, as we call it. And they're not out to help you. They're not on TV altruistically to say, "Oh, I'm going on TV. I'm writing this to help you." Most people are out there doing it so that you can see how smart they are, and then you could call them or something. When it comes to trading, though, I think that you have to realize it. And Fausto, you know this. I mean, you trade the news, of course. You trade the price. You trade the action. You trade the market maker. You trade the traps. You trade the direction, the momentum. And you do it all for the one reason. It's not about that you like the stock. It could have been called Citibank. It could have been called Kakamura.
General Motors. Yeah, it could be anything.
And while most people wouldn't touch that because, here's what the reason is, I think. Tell me if I'm wrong. But most people wouldn't touch the city, let's say, that was invested because, you know, they didn't know where it was going. But mm-hmm. to you, it doesn't matter because you'll be in and out of it so fast, potentially, that, you know, by the time it's moving down again, you've kind of taken your position out already.
Well, a classic example is one I just did recently, Andrew, was General Motors. You know, I remember watching Fast Money, and all they kept on saying is, like, you know, the only thing that's markets pushing General Motors is the day traders, and someone's going to get caught with their pants down. And that's why we don't hold overnight positions.
That's still, wait, Faust, isn't that still trading? I mean, that's weird, isn't it? I don't understand that.
It is still trading.
I don't understand that at all.
I don't understand it at all. I mean, you know, it's a sad thing what happened with General Motors, but you know what? It was an opportunity. I made a lot of money.
What did you do? How did you trade it? How did you do that? What did you do?
I just, you know, what happened? I was trading. It was so cheap, though. I was trading big blocks of stock in it. Right. And, I mean, people have to realize that, you know, the stock went up about 200% in 3 days. I mean, the mm-hmm. stock was at a dollar, and it bounced. It went all the way to 250, and then it came back down to, like, you know, $1.20, then went back to $1.90. You know, the thing was trading a dollar swings a day.
Yeah.
I mean, it was trading 100% movement in a day. Some people can't even make 10% a year. You have stock doing it in a day. And all you have to do is follow the trend, and, like, you know, as long as you didn't quit holding it overnight, you didn't hold it overnight, you follow that trend, you would have did very well. And that's just one example. I mean, do I care what happened, General Motors? I feel bad. Yes. Could we sit here and have a conversation about, you know, how they could save it? You know what? That's not what it's about. There's going to be another General Motors. There's going to be another bank catastrophe out there. There's going to be another pharmaceutical, you know, because that's been hot also, but to kind of slow down a little bit because there was a lot of conventions going on. The pharmaceuticals have been on fire lately.
Wait, some of those pharmaceuticals are ridiculous. I mean,
they
seriously.
Are.
I mean, they were
ridiculous.
And they're
ridiculous. Cheap, too. They were very inexpensive. Some of these pharmaceuticals were like $1.
They go from 40 cents to $3 in 2 days.
Yeah.
I mean, the charts look like the charts are the silliest looking thing you ever saw.
And the best place to find it, because that's what a lot of listeners want to find out, is like, well, where do you find it for $1,000? Well, you look at your top 20 list. Look at your percentage gainer and loser. Look at them. But what's important is, and this is what I teach you, because you can't just see that, you got to make sure it's also tradable. You got to make sure it has good volume.
Right.
You got to make sure that there's shares for you to get in and out of the stock. You know, 50% of the trade is the mechanics of it. The other 50% is a lot of psychology and discipline.
Right.
So you want to keep that in mind.
Yeah, you know,
but finding them are easy. Finding them is a dime a dozen.
Well,
they're out there all day.
A place that I don't know if you look here, but there's a couple of different places that you look. But one of the things I found interesting is, and it seems to highlight some of these really crappy little crap stocks, is FinViz. If you go to the front page of FinViz, there are listings of the top play, you know, top movers of the day and all that. And usually these are these really crazy moving stocks. I mean, because how do you get a 60% stock move in a day? I mean, you start out at, you know, a dollar, you go to $1.60. But those are there. That's a great place and a resource, by the way. And I also want to mention something, and then I want to talk a little bit about some of the trading things that I want to ask you about. But, you know, it's interesting because whether you're a trader, whether you're an investor, you know, I think that I don't think it's a story that I've told before, not because I was hiding it or anything like that, but you know, the way I met you, Fausto, you know this, but the way I met you was that as an investment advisor, as a money manager, I was looking for a little bit of an edge. What I was looking for was refining my execution. I wanted to get the best pricing for my clients when we bought something, you know, whatever stock it was. And I wanted to make sure that we weren't just going through the basic systems that are out there, you know, doing a limit order and, you know, pricing it and then trying to do, you know, staggered orders or whatever else that we were doing when we had large blocks, because obviously we can move markets, right?
Right.
And what I want to do is why I actually initially called you and took your course, and the first part of it was all about just execution, understanding how I could go about getting the best execution. Because you know what, that 20, 30 cents during the day, you know, that could be very helpful over the long term, especially depending
10, on the 10,000 shares a day, yeah, you're talking $3,000.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, that pays for a lot. Especially in the days years ago when commissions were a lot higher. They don't, right now my clients pay like 50 cents or 25 cents for a transaction net. So, but you know, the thing is that what actually opened my eyes to, you know, when we talk about market maker traps, when we look at you know, the halt lists and the various NASDAQ components that are available to find the market makers and understand who's playing it and how they're kind of, you know, not showing their hand and where the strength is, and you know, to watch out if somebody's on the ask and, you know, pressing a stock down, you know, those things are very important. I think that, you know, generally most people don't understand that and even know that's available. So you know, that was kind of a thing that I found to be very interesting, because that little bit of execution always helped. And I agree, you know, people trading on the internet trying to trade, I mean, you can get clipped for 25 or 30 cents on a trade. If you're looking to try to make 50 cents on the trade, I mean, you're already halfway down.
You're halfway down.
Yeah. So let me ask you.
It's amazing that you said that, because I remember when we had that conversation, I told you, I said, what? That's like 10% what I'm going to teach you. You don't even know 90%
right.
of it.
Right, exactly. Great stuff.
And it was great. And you know what? And one thing that listeners should always appreciate and should be out there, because I encounter this problem all the time, Andrew. You know, you as a professional money manager that manages money and trade a lot, even you, you know, didn't even, you know, people look up to you and says, I'm going to give you my money to trade because I know what you're doing. But even you went out there and spent money and you got educated because you needed that edge. And this is why, you know, this is why I have a passion to teach, because trading is a big failure rate. A lot of people don't realize it's almost an 80% failure rate. And everyone that you talk to says, oh, you're just going to lose your money. And it's like, you know what? Yeah, you're going to lose your money because you never got, no one ever taught you how to do it. And even a guy like you that was professional and has been doing it for a long time, even you went out and spent a little money to get educated. And that's how we met. And that's why you still have me on the show coming around for all these years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it worked out well.
Yeah, let me tell you a quick story, by the way, that will reminisce and kind of an unfortunate chuckle. You know, in my book, I wrote a story. I wrote this story in the book. For those of you who haven't picked up the book yet, it's your time to go get it over at Amazon. It's like $13. The Disciplined Investor, Invest Essential Strategies for Success. That's like a neon. Go buy it right now. But, you know, there was a really interesting story that someone I knew who wanted to trade. You know, he wanted to invest his money on his own and make money and all that. And he was practicing, I won't say the name of the, I wrote it in my book, but I won't say the name of the actual program he used. Let's just say that it was a series of lights and different colors which told you either to buy or sell. And this is a true story.
This is a true story.
You know this because I sent him to you afterwards.
I know, sorry.
He practiced and spent money and learned and he did his thing and he did this what's called paper trading for 6 months. And he made like $20,000, $30,000 a month, fake, But paper trading, honest to God, this is true. The first month that he went and went live, we'll call it, right? So he had all the training and he went live. This is without Fausto. This is kind of on his own. He learned from this group. He spent thousands of dollars too. He lost 60,000.
20,000, I think he spent.
60. He lost $60,000.
No, he probably will be paid like 15,000 just for the program.
Right. And he lost $60,000. I said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Don't." I turn your internet off. Turn the whole thing off. What are you doing? He didn't learn how to size positions. He thought he could buy these really rinky-dink, 30-cent stocks and actually, put a big position on. But when he did that, he could never get out. He moved the market. He didn't know that. Paper trading didn't teach him that. And he got cremated. I mean, crushed. It was very unfortunate. But then I sent him over to Fausto when I think he cleaned up his act. But, one of the things that people, I think, need to know that, honestly, and I'm not trying to advocate this for anybody, but, trading again in the way that you teach it, utilizing today with the internet and the programs that are available and the platforms that are available, it's not as hard as it was, let's say, even 5 years ago. And right now, the level twos are there's great information available. You can find out what the other, what the market makers are doing, et cetera. And I think that it's really kind of interesting how you teach that one thing about not only traps, but also market maker moves and et cetera. What is, in your opinion, the greatest way not the highest success ratio, but what do you find to be the best way? Is it looking for traps? Is it looking for certain aberrations in the market? What is it that you really, when you look at it, say, oh, that's a trade I'm going to take? I mean, what are you looking for?
Well, first of all, I want to look for opportunity. I want to risk. Remember, this is a business, so I want to risk the least amount of money as possible with the high amount of reward. So I'm not going to go out there and invest a lot of money to make very little. I'm going to risk little to make a lot. So because there's over 4,000 or 5,000 stocks out there. So when I look at the stock, I'm basically going to look at it and I'm going to see what the momentum is. I'm going to keep an eye and see where the big order is being placed on the ECN book, on the level two book, and just follow the trend. The thing when you look at charts, a lot of people, believe it or not, Andrew, 80% of people spend thousands of dollars reading charts. They're reading backwards. All you need to know is support and resistance. Just have a game plan. And what you do is another thing that I look when I want to take my position is you have to trade in the most volatile time of the market, and which is the first hour and the last hour. A lot of people trade in the worst time. They trade in the middle of the day because they're waiting for all their analytical, gizmos kicking in, and by that time there's nothing really going on. But if I see a trade I'm going to take, I'm going to see what the momentum is. I'm going to find it on my top 20 list stock as a percentage gainer and loser. If I see that thing running and I see there's a lot of buyers and sellers, I can get in and out of that stock with the amount of shares I want to get. So I know there's buyers out there. They know there's sellers out there. I'm just going to hit that offer and I'm going to take it. And I'm going to the key of being a trader is, my goal is just to make what I need to make for that day's pay. I don't look to be a pig. I don't look to hit home runs. I just want base hits. And then basically just try to be very consistent with that and come back tomorrow.
So how, when you say you see, I see it running. I see the position I want. How do you see it? What are you looking at?
Well, first thing you would see is, obviously we can't really, it's really hard to explain it on it, but, they can always learn it in my class. The first thing I look for is a market maker trap. First I see the stock is tradable, that I can get in and out of it. That's most important. Because
so liquidity.
Liquidity. You want to make sure liquidity is there. You want to make sure, if I'm buying 1,000 share lots, you want to make sure people are selling 1,000, not hundreds, because then you'll get partial tickets. A lot of people know what I'm talking about out there, and that costs them money. Then what I'll do is I'll look at the level two, and I'll see I'll see where the big orders are. I'll see if they're on the bid and ask. I'll look on the ECN book. And then obviously look at the chart, what the trend is, have a game plan, know where the next resistance level is. And then obviously the most important thing, which I said will take a while to explain, is a trap. Market makers now are getting more savvy. They know how to use reverse psychology. The people out there know what I'm talking about. Every time I buy stocks, as soon as they buy, it goes down. As soon as they sell it, it goes up. Market makers have a way of, using moving the markets in ways of, tricking the general public. I got a lot of criticism for this from doing some speakings. I had fellow market makers that had to stop analysts from turning off the mic on me when I was speaking and stuff like that. But
you're giving away their secrets.
Yeah, but you know what? We're just trying to get crumbs. I mean, seriously, these guys are moving hundreds of millions of shares. I'm just looking to make, whatever. Just, I'm looking to make a couple. People are just looking to make a day's pay. People just want to buy a job. You know, $50,000 a year is $200 a day. It's 20 cents. That's all they need. You know, they, what are they trading? A couple hundred shares. Some of you listeners out there. I mean, I don't like people like you and I trading big blocks, but you know, I come down to reality, and you know, it's. You just got to know how to, you know, like I said earlier, you just got to know how to play the game. You got to throw fundamentals, technicals out the door, and you just got to be happy with what you can pull out of the market and just come back tomorrow.
Right. So when the market makers are doing a lot of trading traditionally, and the market's pretty active and all that, you know, we can kind of tell that. But lately, the volume has been down. I mean, what do you hear on the streets and people that you know in terms of trading? I mean, I'll tell you in a minute what I've been hearing from some people that I know that are absolute traders. We'll call them traders. But, you know a lot of people out there. You know market makers and all that. I mean, I've been hearing some interesting discussions about, you know, kind of a lot of people are not doing much. But what do you hear from the trading community about what they're doing? Because volume is pretty light.
Well, obviously, U.S. Open's on right now, so a lot of traders are open.
Besides the basketball, besides the golf, besides a lot. I mean, seriously, what's going on in the last two months, even with this big rally? Volume has been pretty light. I mean, what's the difference? What's going on?
Well, you know, it is time of the season. I mean, honestly, I mean, we've been having historical years. I've been trading for over 15 years, and the last 2 years, you know, statistically, this is the slow time of the year. Kids are finishing school, kids are finishing college. You know, kids are starting to go, getting ready to go to camp. So it is a slow time of the year. But the last 2 years, obviously, summers are always slow. Historically, these past 2 years haven't. So that's one of the things. Also, a lot of people, you know, and that's just the wave of trading. You know, that's the wave, how it goes. Now, what's been going on the street, though, I mean, obviously what's going on with the president and all this stuff, all this TARP money that's going around, a lot of people don't know what to expect. People just sitting on the sidelines, they don't want to get caught holding something and not know what's going on. So they're not being aggressive of buying anything or selling anything. A lot of selling's been going on. I think there's been a lot of scared money out there right now. A lot of people just, you know, don't trust what's going to happen, because now you're having a lot of these banks giving their TARP money back. And obviously, they're not going to be partners with the government anymore. So that's causing a lot of confusion there. The government doesn't know how to get out of that one. But it's just people just sitting on the sidelines, just watching and waiting, and you know, and don't know what to expect.
Yeah, it's a very tenuous time, because the truth is that under any metric, I don't care, markets have come up pretty darn fast. And, yes, they did go down fast. I got that. But, you know, they came up pretty fast, and fundamentally we're still questioning things. You know, what do I find the most interesting? That I know we're talking about trading, but what I find the most interesting is that on one hand, there's discussion, let's say, by the Bank of England and England and a few other places, that, oh, they're going to start slowing down, and, you know, we see a sustained recovery happening here. You know, we really did what we can. We really slowed down the job loss and all that. I'm thinking, what plan are these guys from? You know, how are they actually saying that? That doesn't make any sense. It's not really happening. The other thing that's interesting is we're still seeing countries who proclaim that they're coming out of the recession, the things are good and there's growth, et cetera, still talking about additional stimulus packages. Listen, we just came up with the discussion last week that, you know what, it looks like we not only green shoots, they said, the manufacturing is starting, everything is really good, everything's... But meanwhile, we come out with a cash for clunkers, where we're giving people, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 for an exchange, a credit for an exchange of their car. That does not signal necessarily growth. In other words, there's kind of two discussions going on, right? There's a discussion that, oh, everything's going to be fine from here on in, but yet we still have massive amount of stimulus going on, massive amount of quantitative easing going on, massive amount of packages that are going on. And
did you get your stimulus package?
Yeah. Oh, it's great. I love
it. Still waiting for mine.
Yeah. No, I mean, those kind of things, you just scratch your head and you wonder what's going on. We're talking about $4 billion. And that's something we're going to bring up in a minute when we finish up. I'm going to talk to everybody about the whole issue of cash for clunkers and where some of the opportunities are there. Something that we've kind of developed over the last couple of weeks and did some research on. But, you know, those kind of things are just amazing. And even though most people are not in favor of the whole idea of people turning in their cars and taxpayer money paying for, you know, for this, and not in favor of continually giving money to the banks with such a low interest rate environment. I mean, flushing them with funds, and the list goes on and on and on, of course. And you just have to wonder, you know, on top of all that, people got to be nervous when we have a megalomaniac, Napoleonic complex little fella from Korea basically saying he's going to blow up Hawaii. I mean, you know, this is so, and that's just a piece of what's going on, you know, not to mention the concern about China domestically. But the good news is, as a trader, none of that matters.
It's actually great news as a trader because it causes, it, you know, like I said, catastrophes cause opportunities. You know, God, listen, we went to war, when we went to Iraq, and you know, look what happened. All the military stocks took off. That you could have made 300% on your money. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and a lot of people say, you know, well, that's heartless or stuff like that. But you know what? You know, it's not heartless. We're just in a business to make money, just like anyone else that's listening right now. A lot of people are trying to figure out. See, it's not the American dream to look at that. We always look for growth. That's why the stock market was built for that one reason. But you know, it's a totally different hybrid now. People don't realize it. You have to learn to adapt. A lot of people are losing, getting destroyed in their 401ks and don't know why. I'm telling them why. You know, because they don't know how to trade, being a trader, and if you learn how to trade and understand why, if you understand how trading works, and not as an investor, then you'll know why you lost all that money. And
yeah,
you
but in a 401k, you can't trade a 401k.
You could trade in and out of it, though.
Not if the 401k is still at the company. You can't do that. Not really. It's very difficult. Very difficult.
If you want to move it to something else, you can't.
Yeah, but you're going to be in a mutual fund. Most 401ks, if you're currently working at the company, you're going to be in a mutual fund. And the mutual fund's once in and once out a day. Not even once in, once out. It's 4 o'clock. You get in and out. So I agree that if it's a 401k that's self-directed somehow, or if it's a rollover from a 401k that you've moved to an IRA, clearly that's available for you, you know?
Right.
But, you know, let me ask you.
Like some people thought, like, you know, how much lower could General Motors go? Whoever thought General Motors was going out of business. Everybody knew it was going out of business. It was, you know, the only reason why the stock rallies because of the traders, you know, those past times. But that was a done deal. That thing was finished.
Well, sometimes stocks are finished. Again, it's still trading. Sometimes stocks, you know, AIG is still trading, for goodness sakes. I mean, there's some weird things going on. I mean, and they're not making it easier to understand. And you know, the rules have been broken time and time again. I do want to ask you this. So when you're trading, let's talk about the differential between stocks and, let's say, ETFs. Do you have a preference?
I don't trade ETFs.
You don't? Okay.
I strictly just
trade. Why? What's wrong with ETFs? Again, it's just a numbers game.
You know what? It's just, I was, you know, believe it or not, I was never trained to trade ETFs. I know that exactly they trade the same way. I mean, it's more like trading like almost like a mutual fund of a basket of stocks at one time.
Fausto, but, you know, let me interrupt you. I know you. You're a trader. You could trade cow pucks.
I trade anything.
You could trade cow pucks if there was a market for them. I know you. So seriously, what's the difference? Whether it's whatever it is. It's a price. It moves up. It moves down. You can get the feeling of it. Now, the difference is, I guess, there are no real market makers on it, you know, traditionally. That you got a guy that's involved in that in the same degree.
That's why most trade on trade in New York.
Yeah, that's also true. You don't get the NAS. The NAS is much more efficient. Hey, tell me about that. Tell me about the efficiency. Has New York gotten more efficient to trade on in your
lot. It got a lot more because now a lot of the traders are starting to work remote, and because it's too expensive, they don't need to be there anymore. Now it's becoming more electronic, that Archipelago bought them out. Now you get to see the market makers out there a lot more. You're starting to see traps out there more. I never, ever was a fan of trading New York stock. It was more expensive to trade New York stocks versus NASDAQ stocks. Executions were slower at the time. Mm-hmm. Now it's almost equivalent, and I've been trading New York a lot more. I mean, I would say maybe 5% of my trades were New York versus NASDAQ. Now I'm saying it's probably maybe almost like 40%.
Wow. No, New York,
well,
we know, Amex is still around, and a lot of ETFs trade on the Amex, even though it looks like the New York. But and the execution there could be abysmal. I mean, Amex, I don't know your experience there. I know that we trade sometimes, you know, you have to. Stocks listed on Amex, and you're like, and you got to trade that. But you got to, like, you got to set up a whole day's game plan to figure out how to get into this thing, you know? The NASDAQ, what's the latest and greatest, you know, platforms these days? What's the newest things that you're using in terms of, or still just the plain old fashioned level 2 with, you know, execution platform, et cetera? Or is it something different that you're using?
No, I still use the Plano. I've been using the same platform for years now. I help, but what's happening now is I'm helping pioneer a lot of them. I white label my own platform now. It's called a Cyber Pro Trader. Mm-hmm. You can go to our website. Just click on trading software. Thinkorswim is coming. I've been doing a lot of work with Thinkorswim right now. They're more of an option platform, but now they're finding out a lot more that traders are doing more stocks, because a lot of people trade options because it was a lot less expensive to buy the stock. Yeah. But now a lot of these stocks are now single digits.
Options are amazing. I mean, options with Thinkorswim, Interactive Brokers that we used a lot. I mean, first of all, it used to be that it was so expensive to use options. Remember that? I mean, just the commission?
It's the spread, and then you got the time, and you got the and you got the spread.
Yeah, but now it's like a dollar. It's like a dollar. It's ridiculous. I mean, we trade individual equities at like 50 cents for a transaction, and the execution is amazing. And the nice thing is, 5 years ago, you had to choose where you wanted to execute, right? You follow what I'm saying? Because you want to do that and have control over it. These days, the algorithms they use and is just, for a best execution trade, smart mm-hmm. trade, they call it sometimes, they're fantastic.
Smarter routings, all that stuff. And it really is. And that's what today's technology. That's why a lot of these market makers, they don't have to go down to the specialist anymore. Market makers lost their jobs. I mean, back then, I mean, it was all market makers. It was a private club. 80% of them lost their jobs after 2000.
Right. Well, who are the big companies? You had Mehren Schweitzer. I think that was bought by Schwab, right?
Right.
And then...
there was Herzog.
Herzog Hein Glued or something like that, right? They were big.
There was so many big ones out there. The only one that's really real big is Knight is still out there. Knight's still there.
Madoff's coming back.
What's that?
Madoff is coming back. I'm not kidding. This is not a joke.
You want to laugh? People, when he is really funny, mm-hmm. I do my classes, right? And I try to change my slides to try to keep them up what's going on. And because people always complain, he says, "Faster, why you slides? Why you have some old slides?" And so I tell you why. Look on the level two. Does anybody know Madoff? When the whole Madoff thing happened, I'm like, "Yeah, he's right there. You see him, MADF. He's a market maker." Right. They're like, "Was he doing?" Yeah. And like, people didn't realize. Like then, all of a sudden, it lit up a light in their head. Because now they finally realize, like, you hear all this Ponzi scheme and what he was doing and how he's trading. They didn't even know. They're like, I could have watched them this whole time on level two.
Yep. The market make, just like the Alan Stanford, there was another group there too called the Washington Research Group. And that group was actually a good core group. That was a good research group, and it was well-funded, et cetera. That is being spun off. I mean, it's a shame that, the difference between the other side with the CDs and the Ponzi scheme. But Madoff also had a different side, and he had supposedly a good market-making desk that he was not a part
desk.
Of.
Yeah, that was the only thing that had value. He's got a lot of money for it, too.
Right. And they're back. The Fidelity and TD Ameritrade have actually, I think, taken them over or managing them or running them now or something like that. And they're back on the scene.
Yep, they're on the desk.
Back on the scene. And he's probably going to get a piece of that. That's if you'll see. Hopefully they'll use some of that money to pay back, the people that lost money. So anyway, let's wrap it up. Tell me quickly any tips that you have. I know you have a free class. I'm going to pitch it to everybody for a second because, if nothing else, it is the coolest thing. Let me tell you what Fausto does. Fausto teaches you during the day at 9:30. Actually, before that, so you can see the whole routine and all that. But what's really cool is he's live. The first time that I took his class, I remember watching him thinking, wait a minute, he's live, and I'm freaking out. I'm like, wait, he's going to lose money. He's talking. He's not going to be able to concentrate. How is he going to be able to do this trading? It's a live trade. He's got 1,000 shares, but it's very cool. It's very interesting because you do a WebEx thing or whatever you do, and you can actually watch him. It's actually hands-on experience in trading.
The
very,
webinar.
Very cool stuff. Very cool.
Well, it really is, and it's funny because we pioneer education. We started our first school in the industry before anyone in the industry started teaching. And one thing I try to do is I try to adapt to try to accommodate everyone all over the world, because it was really hard for me to travel. It was expensive, and it was also hard on my family. And so I started doing webinars about 9 years ago, before anyone was doing webinars. Even GE wasn't even doing webinars then. And I've been doing it ever since, and it's just very cost-effective. It's very efficient. And the beauty about it is it's being recorded. You can go back. You can review it. And you're right. I'm one of the only people in the industry that actually trade live in the market. And you know what, Andrew, and everyone out there listening, you know this. That's why I know the reason why we get along. We're traders, and if someone can't show you in the real market condition with their own money on the line, explain to you in real market conditions, then obviously, you know, if they can't put their money where their mouth is, you know, then obviously it's, you have to second guess yourself if that person's to teach you. But I'll show you right in the real market conditions. I'll show you how to place orders out there. I'll show you the ECN book. I'll show you how to read level two. And it's a free class. It doesn't cost anything. You know, the guy that you mentioned before that was in your book, Andrew, the funny thing I was trying, we didn't mention, is that after he took the class, he quit trading because he realized that trading was
not fit. Oh, did he? Oh, I didn't even know that. Did he really?
He quit because he finally realized.
Oh, boy.
There was no way he was making that money back because the way he was trading, unless he was going to put more money into it. He finally realized that he didn't have the psychology and have the, you know, he didn't want to, and he didn't invest the time. He finally realized that he didn't know that the times were necessary.
Right.
And so people realize it, and the cheapest trade you could do is get yourself educated. So you should definitely come and take my class, you know, and visit, and I guess we'll tell them.
Well, we'll put a link on the website on the Disciplined Investor show notes. So just go over to disciplinedinvestor.com, and we'll put all the information about Fausto, and he does teach a free class. Actually, I have a free class I taught last week about discipline and investing strategies, and we're going to do another one of those soon, same kind of a WebEx thing, and then there's a kind of a course that does a whole paid thing and all that. Basically do that, and Fausto Puglisi, Cyber Trading University, you are the man. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me again, Andrew.
You're the best, buddy. See you soon. All right, I promised you in the beginning of the show and throughout that we're going to talk about something called Cash for Clunkers. If you hadn't heard about this, you have no idea what I'm talking about. This is the administrations, the president, Congress, the latest way that they're thinking about reviving and doing what they can to force money into the automobile industry. Now, it recently passed, and you're just waiting for President Obama's signature, which is going to happen. And this is probably close to a $4 billion bet by the government, and as they say, to create better fuel efficiency. But in fact, really, it is, but I'll get to the details why it's really not such a fuel efficiency discussion here. It's really more so to get people to buy cars. I'm giving them upwards of a $5,000 rebate, tax-free, by the way, in order to do so. Basically, what they did was they pushed this bill, which is actually called, the real name of it is the Consumer Assistance to Recycle and Save Program. And it was pushed in and embedded in the Supplemental Appropriations Act, or as we know, the war bill, where they're extending the amount of money that's available to spend on Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, everywhere that's out there that we are, you know, got our war fingers in. And basically what this is, it's allowing for people who have cars that were built in 1984 or after that are in driving condition, that have a fuel efficiency of 18 miles per gallon or less, that have owned the car for at least 1 year, to buy a new car that has now, follow this, that has at least 22 miles per gallon and under $45,000, and you'll get a $3,500 subsidy for a car that has at least a 4 mile per gallon improvement compared to the car you're trading in. You could also get $4,500 if you get a 10 mile per gallon improvement. And if you want a truck, because of course trucks are really fuel efficient, you can trade it in for a small-duty truck, which has at least, now listen to this, 2 miles per gallon improvement compared to your old car. I mean, I don't know what, I mean, I guess if you multiply it out, maybe, but, I mean, come on, that's not really a fuel efficiency issue, and that's not really doing anything to help out fuel efficiency and maybe carbon emissions. And if you go to the large light-duty truck, it has to have at least 15 miles to the gallon, and if you have at least a 1 mile per gallon improvement compared to your current car, you can do this. Now, what's interesting about this is whether or not you like it or not, and let me say this, I am not in favor of this. It is enough already. If automobile companies, and some of them now really owned by the government, cannot sell cars, why are we forcing it down the throats of people who very well may not be able to afford cars? Now, follow this. If you have a car that you're driving as your main car, okay, may not be your main car, but as your main car, and it's worth less than $5,000, which really is the, you know, you're not going to trade in a car that's worth more than $5,000 to get a $5,000 rebate, right? If it's worth more than $5,000, less than $5,000, you are going to maybe, I don't know, maybe you shouldn't be buying a new car. I don't know. Again, I'm just thinking. And what you're doing is you're giving the auto dealers the opportunity to embed $5,000, $4,000, $3,500, whatever the exact amount will be depending on the circumstance, into a lease or a buy. And I got to tell you something. I envision this as being a disaster for the consumer. First of all, if there is no rebate and there's nothing that can be hidden and kind of worked with, you know, car dealerships and salespeople are not the most, you know, consumer friendly as I see it. I told you that my wife went to buy a car with my daughter, and they called up a variety of places. They want to buy the new Jetta. And, you know, she called up and asked for the best deal, and the first place was about $6,000 or $5,000 approximately, a little over $5,000 different than the other place. And they asked, when asked for a better deal, of course, they said that was the best deal they had. But, of course, when she came back and said, well, I got this over at the other dealership, they said, oh, we can match that. I mean, come on. That's not starting off on the right foot. Now we have giving them you know, a bunch of money that they can embed in. And here's what I see. You go into a dealership, and let's say you meet the criteria for this trade-in, and you go there, and what's going to happen? Well, they're going to come back and say, well, you want that car? That car's available. Sure, it's going to be $125 a month. And you're going to say, wow, what a great deal. And for those that are unsuspecting and really don't know a lot about the system, maybe it's for a six-year lease. And I got to tell you, if you can't afford a new car, this is not a way for you to go out and buy a car, because in the next year or two, you're going to probably come back and say, you know what, I really can't afford this. And they're going to have to take back the car and the loan. So we are possibly creating another overheated market when it comes to lending that is going to bite us in the butt maybe a year or so out. Nonetheless, let's stay away from the dealerships or the financing part of it. And let's look at what's happening. Now, we wrote a big piece on this on the Disciplined Investor that we're going to publish. Actually, we usually publish it for our clients first. And a little segue here. If these things if you can't find yourself implementing and executing and finding these kind of deals, and if it's difficult for you to research it, and you're looking for an opportunity, you know, we have that Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy open for $50,000 or more. If you want to do it, check out the virtual tour. We'll put a link on the website. Lots and lots and lots of people have taken advantage of that. And you get not only this, you get inside information in terms of how we're actually transacting, how we're creating portfolios, what economics are coming up, the earnings that are coming up, our commentary that you don't see anywhere else unless you're a client of the Disciplined Investor in Horowitz & Company. So check that out. You know, a lot of people have done it. And I think that if you want a trial to check out the private blog, do so. If you want more information, just check out the virtual tour, and I'm sure you'll be happy you did. But here's what we found. When it comes to cash for clunkers, who's going to benefit? Well, we made a list. Maybe used auto parts companies, scrap metal companies that specialize in autos, auto recycling or recycling companies, vehicle auctioneers, car dealers and manufacturers to a degree, of course, because they're selling the cars, steel and parts companies. So when we came up with that, we did a search. And again, if you read my book or you've listened to me for a while, you know about the Quantafund Techna styling or the process. So what we did is we created a screen, and we wanted to come up with companies that were related to either the steel industry. We wanted companies that were in the automobile or received revenues from automobiles. And what we found was approximately, I don't know, a dozen different companies. We'll put that list up on the site if you want to check them out. But let me give you an example of who I thought would be interesting. Some companies are very much like you would think of, maybe like a Ford, of course. Okay, that's interesting. They have their own problems, but just interesting. A company like, for example, Waste Services, Waste Connections, Waste Management. Somebody's going to have to cart away these cars. Copart. This is a company that deals with used parts, let's call it. Schnitzer Steel. If you look at what they do, 100% auto and steel recycling. Now, does that not fit the bill for what we're talking about here? And there's a lot of companies that really could benefit nicely. And we started investing in these companies last week. You got to move quickly these days. You know, you got to bring your researching to a finely honed process, because by the time you think of something, and when the information is finally released, things start moving dramatically. We had CarMax on that list. We talked about that on DH Unplugged last week. CarMax was up 17% on Friday when they came out with earnings and did some projections forward. AutoNation's on that list. And frankly, I'll tell you, we shorted AutoNation, lost a couple of bucks on it, nothing significant, because AutoNation was one of those companies that we were really concerned how they were possibly going to be making money into the future, considering the fact that car sales are off so dramatically. Here's what's really interesting about AutoNation. AutoNation is a multi-year high. Unbelievable if you consider what's going on within the industry. How is that possible? Well, besides the fact that Mike Jackson runs a pretty good operation, generally speaking, although I have a problem with the amount of inventory they deal with and their inventory control and their whole, if you want to call it their whole parking and display. I think that they really have done a terrible job, generally speaking, in America dealerships at having, you know, their floor planning is just terrible. Too much on the floor, too many and too much inventory, and they need to kind of change that around. But that being the case, can you see how possibly a company like an AutoNation or, you know, that is only in the sales, not in the manufacturing, and maybe a CarMax, which has more of a used car flair to it, can do really well with this kind of bill? And maybe what wasn't, you know, was working kind of behind the scenes for a while, and even though most analysts had AutoNation as a sell, and the ratings were pretty poor, they're still at a multi-year high because they're going to essentially have an amazing deal that they can present to the consumer. And when they do so, they're going to reap the benefits. And again, I think they're going to reap the benefits because they're going to really be able to put into the sales deal, if you will, a major, major benefit for themselves, because that $5,000 is kind of free money, which, by the way, as I see it, is not going to be taxable to those that use it. So cash for clunkers, I think an interesting idea, an interesting thesis. Now, with that in mind, I will share with you that we are very concerned with the markets. I think three out of three of our major market indicators had turned down last week. Let's call it red alert. So how do we invest in something like this and at the same time with the markets coming down look to be profitable? Well, what we're going to do is we find our best ideas here, and this is what we're doing exactly for this circumstance. We find our best ideas and invest in them, and if you call them specialty investment ideas, and then hedge it out by shorting the general markets. This way, you know what, if we're wrong and the markets come down dramatically, well, you know what, we still have the short. And if we're right and the markets move up in unison, these will probably move up much greater, and the hedge that we have just muted the returns. So you're not going to always win in every circumstance. I mean, the holy grail would be for the markets to come down and all these to go straight up, right? In that circumstance, that's not necessarily going to happen. But again, in this environment, you have to play the risk return and be smart about it. So with that, we have a great list of guests coming up. I got to tell you, we have, what did we book? We booked Jim Rogers. I mean, the summer is going to be an exciting time. So make sure to stay in tune, stay in touch, check out the website because we're going to put a lot more information. We're going to start doing, I mentioned the screens. We're almost done with all of our screening and presentation for that. And I think you're going to really enjoy that. Get some great ideas. And of course, sign up for the Winning Investor on iTunes. And until next week, let's be careful out there because we are looking very toppy in these markets. And at the same time, let's make some money. I'll see you soon. This is Andrew Horowitz. Take advantage of that virtual tour. We'll talk to you next week on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.